Radio, your gamer's role.
www.b20radio.com. Translating the strain.
Hello and welcome to Translating the Strange. Very excited to have with us today, of course, myself, David Brown, but with us we have Brandon Ording.
Hello.
And back with us, a thrill for me, is Darcy Ross.
Finally. Hello, you guys.
Hey. And we have an awesome guest this time. I'm really excited about it. I'm getting jaded. I'm going to be quite honest. I'm getting a little jaded by having some fantastic MCGers involved in the podcast that I'm working on. And without further ado, Mr. Bruce Cordell.
Hey, David. Thanks for having me on. And hey, Brandon and Darcy. It's nice to talk to you both again, too.
Indeed.
Cool. Glad to have everybody back. Obviously, this is an exciting show because we are at the it's not even the cusp anymore. It's here. The launch of The Strange has occurred. Backers are getting their books. I got mine yesterday. I think Brandon got his today. Is that right?
Yes, I did. I got mine today.
And mine's coming tomorrow.
And Darcy's is on her way tomorrow. So this is prime time for the Strange. Are you excited, Bruce, or what?
You know, I can't even really describe how excited I am. Well, here's one way. I got my book, right? And I got it a little bit before you guys, but not too much before. And I kind of, took it up to bed with me, and I was like reading it in bed. You know, it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I just kind of fell asleep with the book on my chest. I haven't done that since I was a little kid. So yes, very excited.
That awesome. Is awesome. Well, I mean, certainly for Brandon and I can I can speak. You know, we got a sneak peek of The Strange by getting to have a discussion with Monty and Shauna just before the Kickstarter launched last year. And they kind of gave us the pitch on it and what it was about and told us some of it. And of course, seeing it in book form fully done is a complete thrill. But certainly the reason why we did this podcast, because we know this is a great game. We've played it. Again, I don't want to speak for everybody, so speak up. But I'm really thrilled that the game is launched. And you know, again, even going back as far as the announcement of you joining MCG at last year's Gen Con, I think seeing it all come together through this path has been really awesome for me, and I'm really really proud to be involved in the limited way that I am.
Yeah, it's definitely been interesting to kind of have a slightly insider's view of things, to know a little bit more, you know, what's going on in advance, and actually be able to see it come all the way out to a book in my hand. So that's been very, very cool.
Yeah, it has been quite a whirlwind since last year. In some ways, it seems like it has been just a few months since I showed up at Gen Con last year. And it was only like, I think, about a month later that we announced that we were going to actually do it. But I guess, yeah, you guys got the inside scoop ahead of time. But because we had certainly talked about it a little bit.
Absolutely. So let's get into it. The one thing I am curious, Brandon and Darcy, what have you guys been doing with The Strange since we last talked?
Darcy, anything at first?
So I had been, I think the last time I was on, I'd probably been talked about the fact that I got to be a playtester, which has been fantastic. I got to playtest each type, and every character felt very different and wonderful. So had a good time with that. But since then, I've been away at Science Summer Camp making, two-headed frogs and other crazy embryological experiments. So I've been, training, of course, for The Strange in my own way.
Yes.
But now I'm going to be running the Gen Con adventure of The Strange for my group at home, just to sort of practice before I head off to Gen Con. So that's the goal right now.
Excellent. Yeah, yes. I need to squeeze those in this weekend somehow.
Yeah. Thank you guys, by the way, who have said to be GMs at Gen Con for us. That's
pleasure.
Really great.
Yeah, I think all three of us are, aren't we?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think I'm probably running the most. I'm running four slots.
Oh, my goodness.
two of each of the Numenera and the Strange Adventures. So I've got a lot of prepping to do.
But, I'm doing one of each, one Numenera, one Strange.
So you guys will be running Eschatology Code,
yes.
Which I wrote specially for you guys and myself to run at Gen Con. But then one of the we got a question from Charles saying, there's a couple people who are going to be in these adventures who are both our GMs who are also running. So that seems kind of bad. So can we get another adventure written? I'm like, oh, my God, really? Another adventure? Okay. So
this is news.
Yeah. So I actually wrote another adventure, which I will be running for my special Gen Con adventure, which is called The Hum. So the full name is The Hum, Welcome to the Grand Bavarian. So I think, I think, Darcy, are you in that game?
I am going to be. I'm really pumped. Yeah.
So it'll be a new experience. Cool. So you won't have read the adventure beforehand.
Great. Awesome.
Yeah, I think I had picked up that you were talking about writing a new adventure on Twitter, and I think I'd actually sent you something. I was like, well, did the adventure change? And he's like, no, I'm writing one for myself. It's like, oh.
Yeah, and that game and that adventure also will end up becoming the Asset Team adventure that we will give out to the Asset Team people who are running The Strange for us on, as Asset Team members.
Very cool. Explain the Asset Team, because I think there's a lot of people who don't know what a cool thing MCG is doing on that.
Basically, we have a call out. It might be full at this point. I might not be, but we have a call out for people who would like to demo and run games for either Numenera or The Strange at either game conventions or game stores. People who sign up will get some amount of material, including an adventure, probably player characters, probably some other material. And in return for running a certain number of games, I think this is true, you'll get something in return. But I don't know what that is, so I better stop talking.
I do believe the site mentions points for running games.
Shins, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Shins.
Which you might be able to exchange for credit on the MCG store, maybe?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay.
That does sound right.
But it is actually, looks like the signups are currently closed because I went to go sign up and I had apparently just missed the sign up or something. So I didn't actually get to join that.
We had quite a big response, and I think they closed it for now just to kind of see how it goes. But it will certainly open up again because, it's in our interest to have lots of people going out there and demoing,
absolutely.
Like a virus.
Yes. How appropriate. I'm still just ecstatic that it's actually here. We knew it was coming and it was a month early, but still, it's here. And we get to go into Gen Con with it in hand. And yes, with the Eschatology Code, which is an awesome adventure. What, can you give us kind of a pitch for that? Or are you trying not to spoil it at all?
I think I can say what it says in the Gen Con guide, which is essentially, some guy in Sioux Falls, South Dakota is claiming to do miracles and the media is backing him up. So the estate's sending out some operatives to see what's up with that.
Very cool. That's good. That's good. Good bit. All right. Well, cool. Well, let's get into it. I mean, we've all had time to look at Darcy, you've seen the PDF, right?
Yep.
Okay, so we've all had time to look through the finished core book, and of course, beautiful artwork, beautiful layout. You guys do a fantastic job. I mean, it's really what attracted me to, Monty's work was what I saw on Tallis and how well laid out it was. And you guys have certainly taken that to the nth degree, above and beyond what you've done. And it's got a similar layout to Numenera, but it's got its own feel to it. I really like it a lot.
Mm-hmm. Even the adventures you guys make are beautiful. Just beauty to hold, yeah.
Yes, I haven't seen the Eschatology Code laid out. I need to.
Oh, no way.
Oh, yeah. It's all full and finished, and it looks awesome.
Oh, fantastic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm glad we're getting. I think that when we got the Gen Con adventure last year, it was a little sparse and it was like handwritten maps and stuff like that. And it was interesting.
The production values have definitely increased for this year's Gen Con adventure compared to last year.
Well, it's just further ahead in the development. When they put it out as a glimmer, it looked great. It was perfect. And I'm not complaining. It was great.
Of course not.
But it's better to have it, in the format that it has going forward. So
just more professional.
Yeah. It looks good. Looks really good. So
the art, I just want to say one more thing about that. Isn't the art fantastic on the cover of Eschatology by Matt Stowicki?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Matt Stowicki, I mean, he's our lead artist, and, you know, he does great work. Then once again, he does great work on the cover of Eschatology Code, so.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I can't wait to be running the adventure and actually using that artwork to go, and this is what you see.
Show him.
You see this?
Yeah, that's the other thing we should say. You know, you guys are really taking that, the use of the callouts and the player views of those. You know, I can't talk about how beneficial that is for a GM to actually be able to show that and not feel like, hey, I'm showing them half my page, you know, where they might get a bit or something like that. It's a really good design and smart.
You're talking about the art show-ems in certain adventures?
Yeah, the show-ems, yes,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. In certain upcoming adventures called The Dark Spiral, for instance.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. And we was going to get to that. Is that okay. Where it's in? Is that
what you're thinking of, yeah.
Yeah, the Dark Spiral. I know that's the big adventure for The Strange.
Yep.
Is that still being worked on? It's like, where is that? What's the status of that?
It is. We just got the printer proofs for the Dark Spiral, so we just were looking yesterday at, you know, one last time to see if we could find any last errors before, you know, the printer says, okay, I'm good to go. So it's coming along.
Yes, sorry. I did forget that I'd seen that, and that's my advanced knowledge in the future.
Yes, yes, Mr. I'm on the editorial board.
So,
It's hard
yes.
Not to tell tales out of school, isn't it, when everyone is...
Man, I try so hard. I spend so much time worrying about it. All right. So, no, it's actually great stuff, and Eschatology Code is great. But yeah, the Dark Spiral, do you have, like, the elevator pitch for that?
Let's see. I didn't write an elevator pitch for that, so let me think. I guess what I would say about that, yes, it is. It's the first big standalone adventure. You know, we have, you know, we'll have Eschatology Code and The Hum for certain limited people at Gen Con, and we have an adventure in the core book itself, which is called The Curious Case of Tom Millard. But all of these adventures are fairly one or two shot, but. The Dark Spiral is more of a campaign, and it's several adventures in a way rolled into one, but they're all pretty much also easily, they are connected in a long campaign arc. And during that campaign arc, it begins by putting characters who want to be where they're most familiar and sends them on several different missions as operatives of the estate. And kind of gets characters feeling at home in the estate. And one of the adventures they're going to go on is to roll up the drug sale of a certain kind of drug called Spiral Dust. Spiral Dust, which of course is talked about in the core book under the header Spiralers, I believe.
Cool.
And things kind of get crazier and crazier from there.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And the characters are starting out as estate operatives still?
The main assumption is that that's the case, but we provide a lot of guidance throughout the adventure in case the game master would prefer that not to be true.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that is kind of a central driving theme, almost a meta game to the game. Do you feel that way, or am I reading too much into it?
What is the driving thing, that we provide alternatives, or that we say the estate is the...
That the estate is kind of your entry point into all things The Strange. Now, I think as people advance with the game and get to know the game, they may come at it from different angles, but it seems to be kind of the guiding place to go.
It is. We decided, kind of like, you know, we've seen enough origin stories, you know, movies, and, you know, we've seen enough origin story games, for that matter, that introduce people. And those can be fun, don't get me wrong. And hope to play more of them in the future. But we decided that in order to get people invested right away in what's happening, we can just... You know, for the people who want to have these sorts of games, can just say, hey, you're operatives of this thing. You know these things are happening. Now step up and take care of some of the stuff and then blow their minds from there, hopefully.
Yeah, I have to say that I really do like that approach over the default assumption of, oh, you know nothing. And now you have to play through the the learning what your character, you know, you already know this, but now your character has to figure it out. It's like, I really like the fact that he's like, oh yeah, you're an estate agent. You know these things. Let's get on to the cool stuff.
One of the things that happens when, you know, you have to learn about everything is that any sane person, you know, thrust into the situation would say, hey, I run and I call the police, right? And that's not an adventure. You have to say, no, why is my character insane? Why are they going to embrace this stuff?
That premise, it doesn't work. It's like when you're in a fantasy setting, obviously there's a little bit more plausibility there, but it's like, it's a real world setting. So you kind of have to, it's like, nobody would do that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I kind of see it. I mean, a lot of movies especially will tend to have the out of the loop character that is getting in the loop, and by them getting in the loop, it gets the audience in the loop. A good example with a lot of parallels to kind of the estate thing is kind of like Men in Black. So, you know, I could see somebody playing kind of the Will Smith new to the unit character, especially if they don't know a lot about the backstory of the Strange. You can play a little bit kind of the private, and then you could play, for those who have read a lot and are, you know, a little bit more advanced in their knowledge, they could be more the veteran players. They don't have to be that way, but I could see that being an easy in for a GM to kind of have those in the know guide those not in the know quickly.
I think that's a great idea.
One thing I also there's the organization of the estate, but you provided a lot of other organizations that you could kind of use a similar framework for, but maybe have a different angle on, you know, the fate of the human race, for instance.
That's very true, right? The other Earth-based organization, for instance, mm-hmm. is kind of governmental in nature, OSR, the Office of Strategic Recursion. And, you know, they might not necessarily have the best things in mind. You know, we assume the estate does, you know, until proven otherwise, but the OSR, you know, you kind of come at it right out of the bat going, yeah.
Yeah, those guys, they're up to something. Yeah. But at the same time, I can see starting a campaign where you're playing OSR agents would actually be very interesting.
Yeah.
Because you could basically be the Men in Black going around and shutting people down and doing things that aren't good. It's like, I think there'd be a lot of cool conspiracy angles you could play up there.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunity there for intra-organizational snafu or inter-organizational things happening as well. It's like, oh, we didn't know this division of OSR had this, you know, Castle One where zombies were being bred. Well, oh, now you have to go in and shut down your own unit.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, and we said, and now we can kind of spell out a little bit more, you know, some of the things that we talked in an earlier episode about the time we did some playtesting, and that was the curious case of Tom Millard. And I don't think we gave any real spoilers to it. We were trying to really beat around the bush. But what was nice was, I think it's fun starting a game in a modern setting, because especially for those not maybe super RPG
savvy.
Yeah, that's a good word. That it's a good entry point for them, because then it's a little bit more, I can describe a modern room. That's one of the things I've always struggled with, as much as I love Numenera, is it's so out there. It's hard to, you know, even a Star Wars role-playing game, you have a little bit more frame of reference.
You have a context for it.
Right. Not that there's not tons and tons of stuff in the Numenera core book to latch onto and to try and, you know, explain to people, but
we've spent our whole lives with this reality. You know, we rely on it a bit more.
It's a palette that's ready for a GM to work from. You know, when we were going through that, you know, I did a lot of improvisation based around the core concepts of what was in the game or the adventure.
Yeah.
So, you know, talking about going into, say, a corporate building, you know, I was able to pull a Google map for it and, you know, give them more of a frame of context in a real world context. It was fun. Actually, that wasn't that one, was it? That was an earlier playtest.
That was the earlier playtest that we talked about in episode 2.
That's right.
But to your point, I had in some of the playtests I did, I had a, it was my brother's girlfriend. She was the first time she'd ever done any sort of RPGs. The very first thing she did was a playtest for The Strange. She picked it up pretty much flawlessly, you know, no problems, understood everything because we were running around on Earth. Just about a week ago, we tried running the new D&D 5th edition starter set adventure, and she was playing in it. And while she eventually got into the character, she had a much harder time getting into it because of the fantasy setting that was the default. So it was actually interesting to see that she had a much easier time grasping, you know, this, the, you know, the strange, even after we started getting into things that were a little more crazy, like, you know, we're, you know, translating to Arden and stuff. And she already kind of had that baseline so she could understand something weird happening and how her character would react to it.
Yeah, I agree with everything you guys are saying. And that's one of the things I really like about The Strange as well, is the baseline of Earth. On the flip side of that, when you're writing adventures, I've kind of discovered that there's, because you know, as the game designer, so much about all the potential things that could happen on Earth, your mind is constantly spinning out. Well, what if they do this? Well, what if they do this? What if they get online and they start, you know, trying to research it? What if they call the security team in, right? And so it's, in some ways, it's actually requires a little bit more brain space to write an adventure. And I think that so far anyway, I found that really wonderful, because it actually, I think, creates richer adventures. But it is almost, in a weird way, harder to write these adventures than like a dungeon adventure for like I've written for many years in right. my past.
Yeah, because there are, you know, role-playing tropes, especially in a fantasy setting, whereas I think you're much more expanded out. And there is an enticement to stay on Earth because it's a more comfortable setting and you have more, you know, your players are going to bring more options because they live in that world. But once you get to the other recursions, it really unlocks a lot of stuff, especially, and we'll talk about this later, but the different recursions that are based on stuff that may be pop culture, very common interest to them, you know. Let's just get into that. You know, we've talked before about Arden and Rook. Did I pronounce it right?
Yep, Rook. Okay. That's right.
I second guessed myself.
You seem to struggle Rook. With that one a lot, actually.
I do. I don't.
I always hesitate too. Rook or Ruck?
Rook.
Rook. Like Duke.
Yeah.
Or Spook.
Yeah.
I guess.
Okay. Maybe people from somewhere else call it Ruck. No, I'm just kidding. So Rook. Arden and Rook. We talked a lot about them, and I think that there's good information about them already. But you teased the Adam Nocturne one, I think, on our last podcast with you on. And now that the book is out, do you feel comfortable kind of giving some kind of, you know, quickie pitches of what these different spelled out recursions are?
I do not have a problem with that, up to a point.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I don't want to spoil the book for you know, everybody, but I also want to excite them about, you know, because Arden and Rook are such a major piece of that, as kind of what I said about the almost the metagame around the estate and what they're doing. These other ones, I think, are great seeds for expanding beyond that, even and.
Totally. Yeah, so Adam Nocturne, that's like, we have a kind of a chapter called Other Recursions, and while Arden and Rook get their own chapter each, and The Strange itself, which is the Dark Energy Network, gets a chapter, and there's a lot of interesting and crazy sights there. We also have a chapter on various other recursions. Adam Nocturne's one of those, and it operates under the law of psionics, and it's basically kind of a blend of, it's kind of seeded by various anime and superhero stories kind of blended together. And so everyone in Adam Nocturne is youthful and glamorous and amazing, because everyone has some kind of psychic ability called talent. That's with a capital T. And Adam Nocturne actually offers its own featured focus, which is not in the main focus chapter, which I think is called Awakens Amazing Talent, or no, Awakens Dangerous Talent. And it's just kind of over-the-top psychic ability, which you can choose as your focus when you translate into Adam Nocturne. There's another, I can just keep going on into these other things, or if you guys want to jump in.
A little taster.
Yeah, so there's another recursion called Cataclyst. And it's kind of, you know, the recursion seeded by what if the world ended in nuclear holocaust and mutants and magic arose. I'm sure you've never heard of that particular pitch before. You know, and it's like there's radiation everywhere and there's mutants and you can kind of go there and you can get mutant powers and become mutated. And it's not a focus. That's just I think that's true. Actually, I could be wrong about that. Anyway, you can become mutated one way or another. And
looks like there's a list of mutations, but no particular focus.
Yeah. Okay. So you can just become mutated, and fight mutated creatures and maybe some rogue AIs and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. There's a town called Nuke. it's actually near New York, but it kind of went well with, you know, N-E-W-K, like N, kind of gives you some ideas. And there's some crazy stuff going on there. Each of these other recursions, of course, has their own artifacts as well, which are appropriate to that recursion. So in Cataclyst, you, for instance, might be able to pick up a set of battle armor, which is synthetic metal powered armor, which is kind of cool. There's the recursion of Crow Hollow, which is kind of this weird intra recursion. It's a recursion where all the creatures live there. They kind of look like humanoid crows, by the way. They have kind of this inter recursion market called the Glittering Market, and you can buy just stuff from all across all the various recursions there. And as long as you don't come up against the Beak Mafia, which kind of runs the business side of things and shakes down the various business people who do business there. And there's kind of an interesting thing because Crow Hollow kind of trades in all this, both magic and mad science, both of those laws operate there. And when you do a deal in Crow Hollow, you have to pay in Crow Coin, which basically takes a little bit of your soul and crystallizes it into a little gold coin, which you can pay with. So, you know, how much do you want to pay in Crow Coin and Crow Hollow depends on how much of your health you're willing to give up. So those are some of the there's actually several other kind of major recursions. And there's actually several minor recursions, which we give just a few paragraphs to, just to kind of give people an idea. And some of those are actually recursions which are in the public domain.
That's a very interesting topic.
I was super excited to see some of those show up in there. I was just like, wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm particularly happy we were able to put in Oz because that allowed us to put in the the artifact of Dr. Nakedi's celebrated wishing pills.
I saw that. That's awesome. the public domain stuff is great. And I love how, just like in Numenera, the inner book or the inner, what do you call that? The inner lining of the cover?
End papers.
Thank you. The end papers were a map of it was the map of the Ninth World. This, it's the map of the recursions with the major ones around Earth, and then it hasn't, that's the inset, but then the bigger picture is other recursions that you don't even mention in the book but are listed in there. I love that.
Yeah, these the end papers are actually that's true in the end papers of the basic of the tome. In the leather bound tome, the end papers are different.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Wow. Ah, a secret revealed.
That is secret. All right, cool. Very cool.
But I also really like the fact that, all right, you've got Wanderland in there, so naturally you've got to have a Vorpal Sword.
Yeah, it is. Naturally. God. You know, how many games have I written that haven't had a Vorpal Sword in them? Zero.
I know, really.
So I got to keep that streak up.
That's awesome. Well, those are cool. And yeah, there's several others, and they're every one has a really cool kind of take on what it is. And certainly, you know, we've talked before that you've got the rules in there for creating your own recursions. And I know there's lots of people talking about that. Wasn't there talk about a recursion site?
Yes, that was in the Kickstarter rewards, and that will be coming, but it's not out ready yet. Yeah.
All right, that's cool. And wasn't there a character creation site too? Is that anywhere on the horizon?
That is definitely on the horizon.
Good.
But right. Yeah,
I gotta try to get something out of you.
Yeah, that's totally. But we've just certainly been running all out. You know, some of these things, you know, we'll have to wait a little while until we can, you know, get to them essentially. But yeah, they're all on the horizon. Everything we've discussed. I'm actually working a little ahead, because, you know, we want to get ahead of things. And as a writer, I'm working way ahead of production. And so, you know, obviously the Dark Spiral is, like I said, pretty far along, and I've worked on the Bestiary, you know, which is also something we promised. Am I actually also now working on the a book that will come out at some point in the future? But, you know, all these things are promised in the Kickstarter, so I'm not spilling any beans by saying, you know, the Recursions book that, you know, was promised. And then right at the end, the page count was upped when we nearly hit that last goal, but we jumped it up anyway. And that's kind of what I've been working on these last few days.
Very cool. Well, and you know, you say you're working on the Bestiary, but there's you know, obviously a sizable Bestiary in the core book. Mm-hmm. Any standout creature that you are especially proud of or really, you know, had fun using in a game?
You know, I really enjoyed writing a lot of these creatures, because many of these creatures I wrote were Arden creatures. I mean, obviously there's just Arden creatures, but whenever I wrote an Arden creature, I kind of tried to take a standard fantasy trope and kind of, I wouldn't say turn it on its head, but give it an Arden twist and make it really fit in with the story of Arden, which is a fantasy recursion, but one kind of based on Sumerian myths. So, for instance, you know, the Hydra, instead of being, you know, a many-headed creature of a draconic or lizard nature, it's actually a kind of this creature that has human heads, all connected by these big, you know, by hair essentially, and each time it takes a victim, it does multiply its heads, but it multiplies heads by, you know, killing people and taking their heads. And for a little while, the head that's stolen kind of has memories of its previous existence, and it may even help PCs before it finally succumbs and becomes, you know, just one of the Hydra heads. So things like that were very enjoyable. The dragon, I mean, I couldn't go too far away from the dragon, but I, for instance, you know, in Arden, all the dragons have feathers, kind of like, you know, we think dinosaurs probably really actually had feathers in reality. They certainly, the dragons, which, you know, are not dinosaurs, of course, but they have feathers. So that's pretty cool. And they have a couple other twists as well.
Yeah, it's been very interesting to see how, you know, Arden isn't just that's the standard fantasy campaign setting. You know, it's definitely a very unique take on that.
As the art came out, I especially saw that.
Oh, go ahead.
As the art came out, I especially got a sense of that as you guys were releasing little snippets of that. So.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, so very cool. Those are some of the highlights, I guess.
And I like how you call out, you know, what recursion that the creature is in. It's interesting, especially if, you know, the possibility of recursion seepage, you know, seepage between the recursions too.
Right. And you know, that happens more often than you'd think somehow. I don't know how that happens, but
yeah. Yep. Yeah, and knowing cool. which you know, which laws it actually applies certainly helps if you want to know if it's gonna be something that's just gonna work in a different recursion or not. So
Right. And one of the things, you know, that you can, these creatures, of course, if there's a easy connection to the Strange, the Dark Matter network, if they can get out into the Strange and then find an interface to a different recursion, they can actually, you know, they can actually travel from recursion to recursion. It's a complicated way of traveling, but it's certainly doable. So there, that's one way that seepage can happen. It doesn't have to come through translation gates or in opposite gates.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Yeah. That's an awesome factor. And that's when you get into looking at the maturity of what you guys have done with the translating and the process for that. And then, as you said, the gates, how they interact within that, it definitely gives you a broad palette to paint with.
Yeah, I agree. I found it so far anyway. I mean, it's mm-hmm. almost the palette is so broad. I mean, you have to limit yourself. You have to mm-hmm. find a prompt yeah. and or two mm-hmm. and go with that. Because all the worlds of human imagination that have existed in books and stories could potentially find their way into your game of The Strange. And, mm-hmm. you know, that you could find that a little overwhelming, which is one of the reasons we actually focus on, you know, kind of just two or three important recursions that mm-hmm. have the most interaction with Earth at this particular juncture.
Right. Well, and it also gives you plenty of fodder for, you know, any future, and I'm forgetting the term you called it, not glimmers, but...
Fractals.
Fractals, thank you. My brain has been mushed recently. Yeah, so it gives you options for fractals to, you know, have fractals focusing on a new recursion if you choose.
That's true. Yep. Yeah, my brains are kind of a buzz now with various new recursions because mm-hmm. I'm working on this book, but that's cool. Way too far in advance to talk about yeah, that. So,
sure, absolutely.
Given the fact that we've just now, or you guys, you know, or you know, the Kickstarter backers are receiving their rewards,
right?
Just getting their books, but you know, eventually, you know, when as time goes by and you play the adventures, you know, and you're like, what other interesting recursions, you know, not to say that people won't be creating many of their own, but mm-hmm. it's also kind of cool to get some, you know, high production value recursions sent your way as well.
Do you have any interesting kind of story tidbits from games you've led or played with The Strange that would be, I don't know, non-spoilerish?
I'm not 100% sure what you're asking me.
So, like, a specific thing in a game that you've played that was funny or...
Moments
gives
of awesome.
A good kind of yeah moments of awesome, or gives a good picture of what playing The Strange is like for people who haven't played it yet.
Well, there are some spoilery things that are awesome that I but I
yeah right.
a lot of people who are actually probably going to listen to this podcast, I probably don't want to reveal some things sure. that are going to happen in Eschatology Code.
Oh yeah,
yeah, that makes definitely sense. Not
well, I guess that makes sense. You probably mostly led stuff gearing up for Eschatology Code and the Dark Spiral, and
I have playtested a lot of Eschatology Code. I playtested a lot of these things, which I
mm-hmm. yeah, I hear you. All right, we'll wait on that yep. for another day. Yep.
One thing I've been wondering about is, I know it mentions in your introduction to the book, and then you've talked about it elsewhere, that, you know, the original idea for all this was, you know, you were going to try to write a novel. So I was kind of wondering, it's like, where that original story was going and how that kind of compares to what ultimately became the book or the game.
Yeah, well, the book is 30,000 words written, and it's kind of stalled there now for a while.
But it is coming eventually.
I hope.
Yeah.
That's the plan.
Yeah.
That's
great. Yeah, our friend Andrew Cady asked specifically about that. He's very interested in reading Carter's book.
Yeah, me too, because, you know, there are actually some threads in the core book which are not actually followed up on, specifically because, you know, my editors, you know, Shauna and Ray were saying, and Miranda were saying, you know, where what happened here? What's up with that? I was like, well, I don't want to reveal that because, you know, I actually write this novel, finish it. So, yeah, that's something that, you know, I really have been really busy. But lately, just there's the promise of being kind of just normal busy. And that's actually, that promise has come to fruition the last few weeks as well. And I've actually just now started to have time again in my day to think about, like, writing maybe, if I'm lucky, 500 words a day. And I've had to, so to kind of swing back to the original question, Brandon, I had to modify things because the original novel was a little bit more focused on Arden. and didn't actually have the idea that there would be quite so many different recursions. It didn't have the concept for the estate, but you know, as the game grew and grew with all these different richness of ideas, the novel has to change as well. However, one of the ways that I've realized that the novel doesn't have to quite change so much is that the novel actually is kind of takes place in a way probably about 10 years before the where we see the strange occurring in the core book. So it kind of tells Carter's story and how Arden came to be and of things of that nature. In fact, speaking specifically about the novel, the first chapter of which was called Recursion, is actually going to be a short story in the Kickstarter reward. We have a Kickstarter reward of another set anthology of strange stories, and that actually the first chapter of it is going to be a short story in that anthology. So people who are interested in that novel will get a taste of it there in the short story called Recursion.
Yeah, I'll definitely look forward to reading that, because all of the little hints at the, you know, the formation of Arden and Carter Morrison and all of that stuff has been it's very interesting. So it's like I definitely picked up on the fact that that stuff is sort of left vague and unanswered. So those answers are coming. I will certainly look forward to reading that book.
That's great. Yep. That's awesome.
It's funny too, because as technology in the real world is advancing kind of at this ever accelerating clip, with like Oculus Rift is what I'm specifically thinking of. I'm like, holy shit, I'm going to have to like rewrite some of these scenes. I was like, no, I'm not. Yeah. No, I'm not. This takes place 10 years ago. It's all fine. It's all good. All right.
Yeah, I haven't really keyed anybody in on this yet, but for a 40th birthday present for myself and for, you know, completing the Kickstarter and a promotion at work, all that together, I'm getting getting an Oculus Rift DK2. Yeah. I was hoping it was going to be here before Gen Con. It doesn't look like it will, but
The developer version?
Yeah, the developer kit too.
The new one, the second mm-hmm. edition?
Yep.
I've had a chance to play around with the first one, and that one, even with its super low resolution, is amazing. Mm-hmm. So I can't imagine how much better the new one's going to be.
I know. It was either this or a PS4, and I figured, PS4 is not mature enough, and it'll not that this is very mature. But anyways, we're getting off topic.
Super technology.
Read my short story, you will...
How much do you want to bet that the Oculus is actually a secret project by the September Project, and it's set to bring the betrayer into the world?
Leaks.
Yep. Nice.
You're totally correct. All right. Excellent. Well, I'm excited for you, David. I'll be interested to hear about your experiences with that.
I'll definitely share it online. I've been trying to downplay it because of, you know, so much work that I have to do for my own Kickstarter that I didn't want to, make people think I was slacking off. I purposely ordered it knowing it wasn't going to be here until after I got all my stuff fulfilled. So,
gotcha.
But anyways, we're running out of time, and the one thing I just wanted to catch, you know, come back up with is, you know, what we're, you know, we got Gen Con next week, and it's obviously a big thing. We'll have the launch seminar on Saturday,
11 a.m.
Probably, I would bet the tickets are sold out, but I saw last year that a lot of people didn't show and people still got in. So for the Numenera one, so it's worth your time, because there's usually some. I'm gonna say it because you won't. There's usually some cool stuff and, you know, reveals, and of course, you know, picking the minds of Bruce Cordell, Monty Cook, and Shauna Germain is, well, it's really what I've built a closet industry on, isn't it? and then of course the games, as we mentioned, all of us on here are GMs, and I'm sure the games are probably sold out too. But again, I know people in the game I ran last year who got in at the last moment because some people, you know, returned their tickets and made different choices.
I managed to actually play in the Numenera games last year because I had some generics and somebody didn't show up. So
yeah, that's it's perfect. So it can happen, and there's plenty of games. I know even Skywalker is doing some off-brand game, not off-brand, but like not official ones. Mm-hmm.
Black
so there's
Market,
plenty.
Numenera.
Black Market. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Charging half price.
And I know you guys have a booth in the exhibit hall this year again. Yep. I'm assuming that everything's going to be for sale, including The Strange.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. People who, weren't Kickstarter backers and are going to be at Gen Con will have the opportunity to just come up and buy the core book.
Absolutely.
I imagine we're going to have, the core book and the player's guide and probably leather bounds and probably a few other, and we'll have Numenera stuff there as well. Right?
Sure.
All that stuff, which actually, is a more mature game line. So there are several more things you can purchase if you're, really want to go down that road as well.
You gotta really stop and take a breath and realize that within 2 years, Monty and now with Bruce and Shauna have produced this. You guys are a full company with two full lines. It's really impressive. I'm excited to see, and I suspect you'll have more in the wings for us coming up too. But you got two fantastic lines that are going to be. Give you lots of fodder for stuff to do for a long time.
A lot of any nominations coming up, huh?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can't believe I didn't mention that. Yeah, there's tons of any nominations for Numenera. So we'll probably be talking this time next year about all the strange any nominations.
I hope we get a few. But the Numenera ones certainly have happened. And I'm excited. I'm excited for the company overall because, yay, Numenera. And I'm excited and in particular for the Bestiary, which I was one of the co-writers on. So yeah,
absolutely.
You're hoping many many wins come next Friday, two Fridays from now, 13th.
Yeah,
that's right. All right, well, let's hope.
Quickly coming up on us.
They say it, but it's true. We're just so happy to be nominated because, look at that field. 13th Age and Fate Core. Absolutely. I mean, there's just so many great things coming out. So, we'll see.
It's interesting with the big Kickstarter for Designers and Dragons. I don't want to get too far into it, but, the history of role-playing games, I think we're in almost a new golden age with some of the stuff coming out. Really different takes on stuff and really different genres. I think it's a really awesome time to be involved in role-playing. But
I think you're right. I mean, there's been a definite resurgence with the kind of lying fallow of the last previous edition of D&D. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of created this hotbed of creativity. And I'm now with the new edition. There's going to be a renewed interest overall and the people who kind of weren't involved in the core. But it's all good, I think.
Yeah, I'm very excited. Well, Bruce, it's always fantastic to have you on. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us about The Strange before we end this episode?
I just want to say thank you guys for having me on. And, I really enjoy every time we talk, and I look forward to seeing all three of you at JetCon in a week and a half.
Same here. Yeah. It'll be good to see everybody in person.
Absolutely. And as we mentioned, if you haven't already been a backer and are interested in the game, the first place you're going to be able to get it is at Gen Con if you're there. So stop by the booth. Monte Cook Games has its own booth this year towards the back near the Artist Alley, I believe. And it's definitely fun to hang out, meet other Cypher fans. That's kind of what we're kind of taken to now, and learn about all the other good stuff that's offered by MCG. So come by and see us if you're going to be there, and otherwise get playing, try it. It's a great game, and hope everybody has a chance to enjoy it. So with that, Darcy and Brandon, anything else you guys want to add?
Nope. I think we've got a good show here today.
Thank you too for being here, as well as always being a fantastic guest, Bruce, and we really appreciate your time and of course all your efforts in producing such a great game. We enjoy.
Thank you very much. Stay strange.
Always. Thank you.